Welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. This podcast is designed to offer valuable perspectives and insights to individuals engaged in the mediation process. Listeners will benefit from the experience of the profession's most accomplished mediators who share compelling stories of conflict and the lessons they have learned from handling challenging and intriguing disputes. Throughout the episodes, you will hear firsthand accounts of how conflict has impacted the lives of those involved and discover how mediation enables individuals to move forward free from the burden of ongoing disputes. The discussions on this podcast provide practical guidance on addressing and overcoming difficult issues, helping listeners achieve more satisfying outcome in mediation. Whether you're a mediator, an attorney, or someone who has participated or is considering participating in mediation, you'll find actionable advice and encouragement. Your host, Len Levy, is a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution. Len brings extensive experience, having litigated complex cases for over 30 years before transitioning to mediation in 1998, and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. Len Levy's expertise and dedication set the stage for insightful conversations and meaningful learning for all listeners. And now, your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Season 6 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast designed to add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. In each episode, you hear a story about a conflict, the impact it had on the lives of those involved, how resolution was achieved, and the lessons learned from both the conflict and its resolution. Many of the details that are going to be expressed in telling this story may be altered. And that's basically to maintain the essential confidentiality of mediation while still capturing the core essence of the conflict and its resolution. Well, today we are going to be discussing, among other things, the value of good deeds. And joining me today is Lee Mendelson, who is a member of the ADR Services panel, and who I've gotten to know over the past few months. And Lee has an incredible background. For 27 years, Lee was at the forefront of civil litigation and advocating for clients in high-stakes disputes across a broad spectrum of legal matters. His expertise is in a variety of areas, including insurance coverage, personal injury, subrogation, workers' compensation, product liability. It just goes on and on. And he also deals with real estate conflicts and also employment. Throughout his distinguished career as a litigator, Lee consistently found himself drawn to the moments where resolution was achieved outside the courtroom. Not through contentious trials, but through the art of negotiation. So today, Lee Mendelson is a full-time mediator, leveraging his extensive litigation background to help parties resolve disputes with efficiency, fairness, and pragmatism. His passion for negotiation and conflict resolution emerged early in his legal career, and he carries that through into his mediations. He has the ability to lower the temperature in contentious matters and guide the parties through mutually beneficial outcomes through, that's basically the hallmark of Lee's practice. He has been guided by the philosophy that persistence is often the key to resolution. He believes that the difference between impasse and settlement is frequently just one more conversation, one additional effort toward compromise. And as a mediator, his mission is very clear: to help people navigate conflict, identify common ground, and achieve resolutions that work, not just in theory, but in life. And we're going to be hearing a story that really, I think, epitomizes that. And Lee, why don't you tell us what happened in the mediation that you're going to be talking about?
Sure. First of all, even before I get started, Len, I just want to tell you how excited I am here to be here with you on the podcast. I really dork out on this stuff. I love the theory of mediation and hearing about mediation stories and different dispute resolutions. This podcast is just such a great service to the mediators and just lawyers and just people that find themselves in disputes in our community or anybody can listen to it because we all run into these disputes and we all run into problems. And this kind of stuff helps us figure ways out of problems and out of disputes. And like you said, I mean, I envision myself in a lot of ways focused on lowering the temperature, having some expertise in the field, and just persistence in negotiation. I had my own law firm. I practiced law for 27 years, had my own law firm for 21 years, and it was just a suit up, show up, get the job done, and I loved it. But what I really found to be my core strength was when I would end up in mediations, and I would end up in seeing how things were going, and these were multi-party mediations most of the time, and I would find myself saying to the mediator, "Hey, why don't we try this out?" Or, "Why don't we try that out?" And that was the most fun I had. So when I got the opportunity to sell my law practice and go into mediation full time, I just jumped in. And I'll tell you another thing before I get the story, and I'll get the story started. But I'll tell you one more thing that you didn't mention is also I'm an adjunct professor at Pepperdine Law School in the Straus Dispute Resolution Program, and it goes along with studying things from this podcast to reading books. Right now, I'm reading, which I love, is "Never Split the Difference" by Chris Voss. I'm reading that right now. I'm always trying to expand my knowledge in this world. But anyway, so I end up with a dispute on my desk. I end up being contacted to mediate this case. So let me tell you what happened. I sit down, I get the briefs, I read them over, and this is the information that I get. Okay, this is the story that they're telling me. A woman, probably in her mid-50s, probably around my age, a little bit younger maybe, inherited some houses that had been owned by her mother. Her mother had owned these houses. Mother passes away, houses get passed down to this woman. When she takes over the houses, she doesn't know a lot about real estate. This is not her world, really, but I think her husband had passed away. She had worked years before in the business world, but hadn't worked in the business world in probably 15 years. And here she is now. She's a property owner of about 20 homes. And the mother had been, she had been a pretty good real estate investor over many years, and had made some good money in it, I believe. And with those particular 20 homes that the daughter had inherited, she just took it over and started running them, tried to run them the same way that the mother did. And she hires the property manager, who had been the property manager for these homes for many, many years under the mother, right? So she hires the property manager. It goes on, I think probably this is about a year into it, when in one of the homes, it was either a refrigerator or a dishwasher, I can't remember what it was, but one of them causes flooding in the home, right? The home floods, the hardwood floors buckle up, and there's a real water problem in the house. The woman blames the first the woman actually I looked into this before I came on the podcast to go back and review myself on it a little bit, and like you said, the names are changed to protect the innocent, but so it may have been a dishwasher, may have been a refrigerator, I don't know. But
Okay.
woman originally, when this happened, which was the smart thing to do, which I was wondering why she didn't do this to begin with, but apparently she did. She contacted the people that had sold the refrigerator to her. And I don't remember, I mean, it was like a Best Buy or Pacific Sales or whoever it was, whatever the company was that sold the refrigerator, and said, "Hey, you sold me a defective refrigerator," right? But turns out that refrigerator had been in that house for for many years, probably like 6 years, 6, 7 years, right? And that's the first response that they got from those folks. Second response that they got, and which happens quite a bit, if you've ever litigated or mediated these types of cases, it was the installation of the refrigerator. They had an expert, the company that did the review, right? The company that sold the refrigerator hired an expert through their insurance carrier, came out, and the expert said, hey, it wasn't, you know, anything wrong with the refrigerator. It was a faulty installation is what they blamed it on.
Let me just interject something. You mentioned insurance. Did she contact her insurance company? This wasn't a subrogation case.
It was not a subrogation. And I don't know why her insurance company was not involved. I don't know the answer to that. And that is a very good question. And I kind of remember asking her about that. And she kind of didn't give me a straight up answer. But like it wasn't. And I didn't dive into it too much other than to say, hey, you probably have homeowners insurance that'll cover. You know, I think I repeated that.
Right.
I'm sure. I mean, that's kind of what I would have gone to. For some reason, that was not on the table. And I don't know why, but it wasn't. So she decided then to sue. And honestly, if she would have gone to her homeowners, and if she, I mean, who knows? Maybe she didn't have a valid homeowners at the time. I don't know. Or maybe there was some reason why it wouldn't cover it. I don't know. Or maybe she was afraid she was going to, maybe there were other claims and she was afraid she was going to lose cover. I don't know what it was. Could have been a million things. She was suing for $75,000, which is a lot of money, but it's not a crazy amount of money, you know? And so who knows what her deductible might've been. I don't know. So anyway, but usually it's a lot less than 75,000. But anyway, she decides she's not going to sue the people that sold it, and she's going to sue the property manager. And that's who she sues. And she says the property manager had to have been the one to install the refrigerator, plus the property manager probably installed it, according to her. She didn't know for sure. And the property manager was supposed to monitor the houses, according to her, and to check to see what's going on in these houses. And if there's a problem, he's supposed to jump right on it. He wasn't properly monitoring the houses like he said he would or like he was supposed to. And so it's his fault. Okay, that's her take on it.
It sounds like a tough sell, just first impression, as far as the, it sounds like she's speculating a lot about what the property manager could do, should do, and might do, you know?
Right, especially on the should do. I mean, honestly, because I don't know any property managers who go in and routinely check out the houses all the time. I mean, I know they come in when there's a complaint, you know, but that's all they do. And then I'll tell you about this guy that was the property manager. A little bit. Who's an interesting character, right? This guy, I mean, his lawyer wrote a brief. And it was a short brief. Basically, all the brief said was, I don't remember whether or not I installed the refrigerator. And it's not my job to go in there and check out the house all the time. I mean, that's basically, I mean, you know, it laid out some law or whatever, but it was very short. Wasn't much to it, right? And I wasn't surprised when I met the guy. As well, he was very similar to the brief. The guy was buttoned up. You know, he's a good guy, seemed like a good guy, working class, not a big talker, not going in there and telling you everything else, anything about it other than to say, hey, I'm not paying for this. This is not me and I'm not paying for it, which leads me. And we can talk a little more about this when we get into the process of the mediation. But I really do feel like a lot of the reason why we even ended up at this point, and we're going to had to do a little bit with the way the property manager spoke to people and the way this owner of the houses was used to being spoken to. I am relatively certain that he was offensive to her in the way. I don't know, think he meant to be offensive necessarily. Maybe he did. I don't know. But I don't think he was like the most kind guy speaking to her. He wasn't overly, you know, like you and I talk and we explain things and we move our hand. Like he's just, yeah, no, okay, fine. Like kind of a guy. And I don't think she liked that. I'm actually, no, she didn't like that. And I think she expected more out of him in that, how to run the house and all these instructions. And he was just like, it's my job to, there's a complaint, I'll come in and fix it. If you need me to do something, I'll come do it. But that's it. You know?
Well, let me ask you too, did you have a pre-mediation conversation with the attorneys to kind of get an idea as to, do these people clash on a personal level, anything like that?
I did have those conversations. That's kind of like my regular process is to give a call. Usually I set up a call a day or two before it starts, you know, because there's two things. The main things I want to know are there any legal issues I don't know about that I don't want to embarrass the lawyer when I go in there in front of his client. So if there are like sanctions with discovery and stuff like that, I want to know about it beforehand. And then I also want to know about client control. I want to know, hey, is your client someone that's going to listen to you or not? And kind of what's going on with your client. And this is kind of the take that I got from talking to the lawyers, from what I can recall. The lawyer for the property manager was just kind of laid it out the way I just laid it out to you. Like, this guy doesn't talk much and that's it. And I want to tell you my take on this. And sometimes folks end up going to mediation and listen, I'm not complaining. I love it when people hire me for mediation, but sometimes lawyers go into mediation and they may not have had to have hired us to do it if they'd have spent more time talking to their clients early on to delve into the, you know, when I was a busy lawyer, I'm not saying I always did this because I didn't. I wanted to. It was my goal to talk to my clients to get to the bottom of what they were feeling and everything else. But sometimes if you do that a little more, you'll find out that there's things going on between these people and there's animosity going on for some other reason that we have no idea about. He didn't know anything about that. He didn't bring it. The lawyer for the property manager said nothing about anything like that other than he's kind of a buttoned up working class guy, doesn't believe he owes it, and he's going to be a tough cookie and when we come to the table. I mean, that was kind of the way it was laid out to me.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break now, and we are going to continue our discussion with Lee Mendelson, who has laid out the nature of a conflict. We're going to be getting into the mediation and what took place at that time when we get back.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm chatting with Lee Mendelson, who has laid out a very interesting backstory to a mediation, and we're going to be getting into what actually took place in that mediation. I mean, was it in person? Was it Zoom? How did that lay out, Lee?
Yeah, so it was in person. The plaintiff's attorney wanted to do it in person. The defense agreed to it. So we decided to do it in person. We get there, and like whenever we do these in person, even when we do them on Zoom, I do the same thing, really. I set the folks up in different rooms in Zoom. It's in different Zoom rooms, you know. In person, they didn't see each other. They went to different rooms. They sat down. I make sure everybody has a snack. Everybody has a cup of coffee. I think once people have a snack and a cup of coffee, they feel more comfortable for whatever reason. So we get them a snack, get them a cup of coffee. Everybody sits down in their room. And we start talking, right? So I usually, and I did in this case, I usually start off with the plaintiff to hear what their point of view is and to get their initial demand. Because sometimes when I talk to them, the demand will be something different than what they said in the brief and, you know, to get the ball rolling and to get the conversation going. And another thing that I do, I try very hard to, when I first talk to someone, to get those emotions out, because I feel like I just want to let them talk. I want to spend a lot of time just hearing them out and what's going on with them, because sometimes you find new information out when you do that. And also even times when you don't find new information out, they've cleared themselves out and are ready to negotiate after they've been through the emotions and after I've empathized with what they had to say. Because usually I do empathize. I put myself in their shoes. Empathize means to put yourself in their shoes. Mm-hmm. And I try to do that. And I hear them out. So I go, first I speak to the woman. She talks about how she inherited the homes and how she's so upset. And this guy didn't do his job. And he's really, I would ask him questions. He was never, you know, I started hearing a little bit more about how he wasn't such a nice guy to her, kind of a thing. She did, according to her, she makes your $75,000 demand and that's it. She gives me a little bit of emotion, but actually not that much. But I hear some of, she just mostly seems very upset about the houses and it's not going the way she thought it would. And it's a lot, apparently, it's a lot harder to manage this real estate than she thought it was going to be. She hadn't worked in a long time and it's a bigger job. She thought she was just going to be able to own these and that property manager was going to do everything for her and that was it. And she's finding that he's not doing a great job according to her and she's mad.
So she has a level of frustration born of dashed expectations, which might be totally unrealistic expectations, and she's transferring that to this guy who is not treating her kindly.
Correct. She has high expectations and low experience, and she's depending on this guy who she thinks is not being nice to her.
Dangerous combination.
Yes, of course. And so whatever happens is his fault. You know, right. If anything, that's her point of view. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then it takes about 30, 40 minutes. It took longer than I just explained it. So we go through that $75,000 demand. Then I go over to the next room, talk to the guy. He's buttoned up, doesn't want to say any. I go to the lawyer. I was like, do you mind if I always do this. Say, do you mind if I just talk directly to your client for a minute? And I want to hear what he has to say. And usually, like with the woman, she started telling me the, you know, how angry she is at this guy, blah, blah, blah. He didn't say hardly anything. Like he's like, I don't know it. I don't owe her any money. Yeah, but why don't you own her? What do you think happened? I did my job. I don't owe her any money. I'm not paying her a penny. But what, I'm not doing anything. I'm not paying. So that is what I'm dealing with. Okay. So $0 response, refuses to say anything about anything and won't offer anything. So we're dealing with impasse on day. I mean, what I usually try to do in that situation is I try to say, okay, I get it that you feel like you don't owe that much money. I get it that you feel like she made an unreasonable demand, but you're going to have to come to the table with something. Just even give me like a nuisance offer. Give me something that I can walk back with. So we have a conversation going back and forth. Not from this guy. This guy's offering zilch. Okay. So that's that.
And you've conveyed the $75,000 demand to him.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. He knows there's a $75,000 demand. I mean, first we talk, then I convey the demand, then I get the response. And response is, it wasn't even like, that's a ridiculous demand. You know, a lot of times you get these responses like, that's a crazy demand. That's so much money and blah, blah, blah. You know, and first of all, usually these cases that they hire us for, you know, at ADR, they're usually higher balances than $75,000 too. This was not, I mean, this was not a huge case, right? Anyway, that's the story. And he does not, no major explosion on what it was. It's just hard-nosed, not really talking, $0 offer.
We're not talking about insurance. We're talking about money that would be coming out of his pocket.
Correct. And I asked, these guys, you know, licensed contractors have to carry a bond. Right. So he had his $15,000 bond, but she had not made a demand on the bond even, you know, and I don't know what the deal was with that. But I had suggested to her when I was in her room, like, did you make a demand on the bond? And she didn't really know. She didn't seem to know what I was. And I started to explain it to her a little bit. She didn't really understand what I was talking about. And the lawyer was not very helpful. Her lawyer was not very helpful in that. Like, I don't know that he had that much experience in this world either, truthfully. Right. So anyway, that was that. And now I'm back in the, so I got to go back to her with the $0 demand. I go back with the $0 demand. I go back and forth a couple of times. And finally, I go back and forth a couple, like twice where I'm really getting no movement. He's not making any offers. She's saying something like, well, I could probably come down a little bit, but I'm not going to bid against myself kind of an offer, which I understand. I mean, I get that. And so I'm kind of just trying to get, so I'm like, okay, it's really time. I've got to get to the why here. You know what I mean? Yes. Why are we in this particular position, right? So I start asking her how she got the houses, right? Mm-hmm. And she inherited the houses from her mom. She was surprised that her mom gave them to her. Why were you surprised that your mom gave them to her? Well, my mom and I hadn't talked very much in the last like 10 years. There's something going, you know, turns out there was a real issue between her and her mom. Right.
That was getting in the way of her dealing and processing this on a rational level.
I was just asking questions. Like sometimes when I get in there and it gets down to we're at impasse and we can't figure things out, I just start asking questions and trying to get to the bottom of why we're at a stalemate, because it doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. Right.
Got it.
And then I go back to the guy. And now that I have this information and I say to her, hey, do you mind, because it's confidential, whatever's going on in those two rooms, I don't tell anything to the other side unless I ask permission from them to, hey, can I go talk to the other side about this? And I said to her, I said, does he know that you had this bad relationship with your mom? Does that have anything to do with any of this? And she's like, oh, he knows all about it. You can talk to him. I was like, okay, so fine. I go back to him. I start talking to him and he's, yeah, I was like, you know, we just start talking. And then I was like, you know, she had a terrible, her mom, he wouldn't really say much still until I said, you know, she really didn't get along with her mom, I don't think. Boom. He opens up a little bit, right? He's like, oh yeah, she was terrible to her mom. Starts telling me how she was not nice to her mom. And then he starts telling me how when her mom had cancer and was dying, that she wasn't talking to her mom, that she didn't even know about the cancer, and she didn't even know, and she was not helpful to her mom, her mom is sick. I was like, oh my God, that's so terrible. How do you know all this? You're the property manager. And he's like, yeah, I was the property manager, but I was her property manager for over 20 years. When she would buy these houses, she'd have me come look at them. Like I worked really closely with her. I had a great relationship with her. She was my very close friend. I was like, wow, that's so nice. It's so nice to have such a close relationship with somebody that is your, that you work with over the years. I love that. I love that when that happens. And he goes, yeah, he's like, I was the one that drove her to all of her cancer treatment. Like I was the one that took her to go to her, get her chemo. I would pick her up. I would drive. I'd sit in the rooms with her while she got her chemo. I was like, oh, wow. Like this is like a very emotional situation. I was like, does she know, does the daughter, the woman that owns the houses, does she know that you were the one that sat in there while, so we're going into all these things. Okay. We're talking about a whole lot of stuff that doesn't seem to have a lot to do with this case, right? It doesn't have a lot to do with water coming from a refrigerator, right? But it does have everything to do with the case, right? It doesn't sound like it has a lot, but it really has everything to do with it.
Is it something that because of what he did for the mother, he feels that asking him for money is something the mother would never have done, and so he resents even being asked something like that?
That's part of it, because he really thought the mother was a very smart businesswoman and understood real estate and understood what his job was with the real estate. And she never would have asked him because she knew it was not his job to go and monitor these houses all the time. And even if I didn't do the installation correctly, that was 6 years ago. I do all this work for her. She never would have asked me to pay for this. This is ridiculous, right? That's kind of his take on it. And he's probably right. I mean, I think that was probably true, but I did get the, at that point, I did get the, even if I didn't, you know, so I'm getting to where there's a little bit of sunshine coming in, right? Yeah. No offers yet, but there's a little bit of sunshine coming in, right? So then done with him, still making a $0 offer, but he's talking about even if. And then I go into her and I'm like, I'm like, listen, I don't want to get too much into everything, but I just want to let you. And he told me everything's cool to talk about it. I was like, you know, so your mom died of cancer, huh? Yeah, my mom died of cancer. It was really sad. At the end, we were able to kind of resolve our relationship, but we had this heart relationship for a long time. I didn't even know that she had cancer for a lot of the time and blah, 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 right? And I said to her, well, did you know how close the property manager was with your mom? And she's like, well, I know he knew her well and worked with him for a long time. I was like, no. I was like, he was her very good friend, and he drove her to the chemotherapy treatments and watched her and took care of her and made sure she got where she, her husband wasn't around, or she didn't have a husband, got her to where she needed to go and took care of her. Boom. Tears from the daughter, right? I mean, here's like, oh my God, I'm suing this guy who took care of my mom when I have all this guilt because I didn't take care of my mom. Here's the guy that actually did take care of my mom, and I'm suing him, right? So she's like, listen. So then we get to that. She's like, listen, I still feel like it was his fault. But she starts to really, really, really soften up, right? So then I go back into the guy, and I was like, she's like, listen, see what he'll come up with. And I just want to be done with this kind of a thing, right? This is a long conversation that I had with her, but after we go through that, and then I go back to him and I tell him, hey, you know, she feels so horrible about this. She, you know, I tell him about the emotions with the mom and how she's so grateful to him for doing this, because she had said to tell him that, how grateful she is for him that he took care of her when she wasn't there because of emotional reasons and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah. And then we start talking about he's like, yeah, maybe it could have been my fault with the installation. Listen, I'll throw in a couple $1,000. Okay. All right. Okay, great. He's throwing in a couple $1,000. Go back to her. She's like, basically at this point, she's like, and she knew about the bond now too. Which she didn't know about. So she knew she could probably get another $15K if she filed something on the bond, but whatever. I don't know if she did that or what she was going to do. But she's like, yeah, that sounds about right. I'll probably do this. And then went back a couple of times, settled it, I think, for like $5,500 or something like that. Okay. And then at the end, so it's settled. We settled the case. And at the end, and I never do this. I mean, this is not something I do on 99% of mediations. Everybody stays in their own room. We settle the case. Everybody goes home. Nobody sees each other. Sometimes the lawyers will see each other for a few minutes to talk about, you know, who's going to send the settlement agreement to whom or whatever. Right. But for the most part, nobody sees each other. Right. She says to me, the owner of the house says to me, I really want to talk to him. Is that okay? I was like, let me go ask him if it's okay. So I go ask him if it's okay. Okay, yeah, that would be fine. We go into the same room. She starts crying, starts thanking him for everything she did with her mom. I mean, this guy starts to emote. Like, this guy starts to welp up. And this guy is like not, he is like hardcore guy, right? He starts to, I'm not going to say the mediator cried. I'm not going to ever admit that, but it could have happened. All right? It's okay. Possible that that happened. All right? It was an emotional situation. They hug it out. And that was it. And he's still, I mean, they start talking, they're going to keep working together. And that was the settlement. That was,
you know, something we're going to get into takeaways in just a moment, but you know that what you've done here is beyond settling a lawsuit. You've resolved a conflict, allowing them to get on with their lives. And in this situation, you know, results like this just don't happen by accident. This is applying the right mediation tools and training. And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after a word from the American Institute of Mediation.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and we're chatting with Lee Mendelson, who has just conveyed to us an incredible case that resulted not only in settling a lawsuit, but resolving a conflict and allowing the parties to go on, and fantastic result. So let's talk about some takeaways from this, all right?
Sure.
And one of the things that impresses me is that what helped get this case resolved was your recognition of, at least, I don't know if they still call it this, but the below-the-line issues. What are those issues that are beneath the surface that have nothing to do and wouldn't appear in court if this case was tried, that had everything to do with getting it resolved?
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, this is what... And when I teach these things, I teach about positional bargaining, mm-hmm. and principled bargaining. Mm-hmm. And this was a clear case of positional bargaining. She was taking a position, $75,000.
Yeah.
And he was taking a position, $0. Mm-hmm. And these positions were set. They weren't, quite arbitrary, really, but they were kind of arbitrary. I mean, she didn't have damages that added up to exactly $75,000. You know what I mean? Like, right. It wasn't like, you know, when I started asking about, can I see, you know, and we did do this too, ask to see the criteria behind it, to see, you know, okay, let me see the repair estimates and blah, blah, blah. You know, it didn't totally add up to whatever number she was searching for, but she just had that hard and fast set number, right? He had a hard and fast set number of zero, which was not great either, because he knew that there could have been something wrong with the installation as a chance. Like, he seemed to kind of know that there might have been something after we dove into it. You know, when you look at a case, right, mm-hmm. There's two different levels you can look at it. You look at the substance, where they're making demands back and forth. But then when that substance isn't working out for you, you look at the process and you're like, this process is not working for me. The back and forth, trying to divide a pie into different pieces, is not working for me. So instead of taking one single pie and divide it into pieces, what do we need to do? We need to bake some more pie. We need to open up the conversation to more things. To really, and this is what I like to do this, I started to ask the why behind positions. When people set positions, they generally, or they should, have some level of interests behind the positions. And I'm trying to find out, okay, I hear you want this number, but then I'm like, what are you actually interested in? And that's when I started asking all these questions about, you know, it took me a couple of rounds. And then I started asking a lot of questions about how did she end up with these houses? What is her background? I found out she didn't have a lot of experience in real estate. She was counting on this guy. This guy she thought was rude to her. Then we got into the problems with the mother. You know, I started, and before you get to that, I mean, Len, you know this as well as anybody. You have to develop that trust level with people. People don't just tell you things, you know? And, you know, I really try when I go into the room with folks to empathize. I want to put myself in their shoes, right? Something happened and there is real trauma most of the time. You know, even when it doesn't seem like, even when it's just a random car accident, and somebody got, there's trauma there from the plaintiff side. There may not be trauma there from the insurance adjuster side, but there's trauma there from the plaintiff side. And you want to empathize with that person to alleviate that trauma as much as you can. You don't want to re-traumatize the person with a mediation that's so disruptive in their life, or re-traumatize them with litigation. I mean, you want to get them comfortable. And once you get them comfortable, they're able to talk to you.
Understanding what the emotions driving the bus are is something that requires, I think, at least my impression is, it requires the context of mediation. You know, you and I talked about how attorneys can actually talk with each other back and forth and settle cases. But in a situation where the emotions are driving it more than any practical consideration, it's going to cost X number of dollars to try the case, or it's going to, or it's your the likelihood of recovery is maybe very slim, or things of that nature. When the emotions are driving it, it's very difficult for attorneys to get that information from the clients. At Loyola, I taught negotiations and really emphasize the getting to yes aspect of understand the interests of your client and advance those interests. Here, it would be, I think, very difficult, but certainly worth
here. Yeah, I'm sorry to, here, I think in this type of a case, you know, I mean, really, the guy, the attorney that represents the owner of the homes, he's not going to, he's going to ask her about what happened in the house and how long the guy's worked for her and that kind of stuff. And the guy who is representing, or the woman who's representing the property manager, is going to ask the property manager, hey, did you install this? What type of pipe did you use? When did you do the installation? Those are the right questions to ask. You know, it's not a feelings question, but when you're, once you're in mediation, it's our job as mediators to try to find out, really, if we want to get this resolved, we have to know what's going on with these people. And sometimes it looks like it's just a dispute on numbers or a dispute for damages, but there's a whole lot going on. I'll tell you one situation where the one situation, I do some a good amount of employment mediations, right? And in the employment mediations, the plaintiff's attorney in the employment mediations, they're usually pretty good at getting to the emotions of the plaintiff, because those plaintiffs feel like they've been sexually harassed. They feel like they haven't been paid for whatever hours that they were supposed to have been paid for. They feel like these, I worked for this guy for so long. And those people get to the emotions, but you know, in like these personal injury cases or in the property damage cases like that, the lawyers don't, because most of the time they don't think emotions really matter. When, you know, once we get into mediation, we can dive into that and we can find out that they do. These people need to get past their emotions. Mm-hmm. And once they get past their emotions, they're able to talk money.
And one of the things that's the hallmark of what you do as a mediator, and most effective mediators will do, is ask questions and listen to the answers. Try to really understand that there is a, and reaffirm with the party, it's okay to feel this way. And instead of, see, there's a human tendency, I think, to just say, okay, well, somebody lays out all these emotions and say, well, why are you letting this get in the way of, all right?
Right.
Kind of almost delegitimizing those emotions.
Right. That's the opposite track. You're right.
Exactly. So what you did was you took the ideas that you got in terms of what might be impeding the progress of getting this resolved, and turned it completely on its head and said, okay, this is why this person feels this way. Knowing that the emotions are driving it.
Yeah, I'm very into that. I think psychology of mediation is very important, and it's something that to focus on. And a lot of the ways that you know, like you said, you don't want to say, "Oh yeah, that's totally messing you up. You got to forget about that." Doesn't work. What does work is to paraphrase what they're saying, you know, kind of mirror what they're saying, and so they know that you're hearing them. And really actively listen and ask questions according to what they just told you, so they know that you're hearing them. And then what really helps a lot that I've learned this, and I didn't really believe how great it was until I started trying it, is to label emotions, right? So this woman is talking about what's going on with her. This property manager, he's so rude to me, and he's supposed to be helping me, and I don't really know what I'm doing. I've never run a house, and I'm counting on him, and he's not telling me anything. And this is real. And I just said to her, you know, that's got to be frustrating as hell. That's got to be super frustrating. And she's like, yes, it is frustrating. You know, to put that label on that, and for her to know that I heard that she's frustrated, does wonders.
Affect labeling is what you're describing. And I don't, Lee, I don't know if you know Doug Knoll, but Doug Knoll wrote a book called De-Escalate. And basically, it's how, I think the subtitle to it is How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less.
I like that.
So Doug has been a guest on this podcast as well. And the affect labeling, if done effectively, can really de-escalate the conflict by simply calming the person down and allowing them to take in some rational thoughts and some practical thoughts. Without that affect labeling that you did in this case, it's like there's a cork in the bottle. You're not going to be able to pour anything out of that bottle while that cork is there. So you've done a fantastic job there
Now, if I could just get this to work, now if I can just get this to work with my three daughters, my three teenage daughters, I'll be doing great.
Well, you know something? Get Doug's book. There's a whole thing on dealing with teenagers.
Oh, that's great. All right. My girls are pretty darn good. I'm just kidding. But sometimes that fight over the Alfred's coffee can be bigger than some of these mediations. So, yeah.
You know, the idea too of understanding why and having a conversation where people can explain things in as to why it bothers them. I don't I can't imagine that any time in the whole process of this dispute that there was a real opportunity to do that until mediation.
Correct. And we got to in so that shows you how important this process can be and how helpful it can be and how we can actually get cases resolved where these folks might have ended up going into litigation and they might have just kept battling it out. And you know what else would have happened if there would have been no mediation here? They probably would not have worked together anymore. She would have had to find a new property manager. He would have had to find a new gig. But by them agreeing to go through this process of mediation and by us sitting down and talking about things and me having the real privilege of working with them to talk through it and to find out the why underneath the positions and to hug it out. And now they work together and it was a good result. And I think that would not have happened without mediation. So I'm really proud of that one.
I will tell you that is a perfect wrap up as we are out of time. And Lee, before we go, I want to thank you very much for this conversation and really hope to have you as a guest again in the future. But how can the listeners contact you? What's the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to the ADR Services website, and I'm listed there. You can go to MendelsonMediation.com. So my last name, MendelsonMediation.com, and I'm listed there. You can also look up Lee Mendelson on LinkedIn, or you can just drop me an email at lmendelson@adrservices.com. And happy to help you. Happy to talk to you if you have any questions about anything that we talked about today or anything else to do with dispute resolution. So thank you.
Very good. And Daryl Wayne, my engineer, I want to thank you as well. And I'm your host, Len Levy. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Invigen Labs, Inc. And as we wrap up, I hope you continue to enjoy the stories that we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.